welcome to Untangled FM. You're on the Health and Happiness Show with Edwina Griffin. Well, I hope you all had a great week with some of those smoothie recipes that we got last week from the Yoko and Lucy. Great tips on nutrition. And today we're going to focus a little more on the body and health and, yeah, actually all areas in terms of alternative medicine. I'm very excited today. My nephew has been involved in kinesiology since he learned Touch for Health when it was first introduced in Australia in 1979. He's continued to use kinesiology in all its forms since then, practicing and teaching in Australia, New Zealand, USA, Dubai and Indonesia. He introduced several kinesiology programs to Australia from the early 1980s, including Touch for Health, Educational Kinesiology, Hypertron X Sports Kinesiology, Applied Physiology and NOT, Neural Organizational Technique. He's also developed his own program called Integrative Kinesiology in 1986, and established his own training organization known as International Institute for Total Mind-Body Integration. He was the founder and director of the Australian Institute of Kinesiologists, which affiliated with the Australian Traditional Medicine Society in 1999. He's worked with several top athletes, including Olympic swimmer Tracy Wickham and tennis champion Pat Cash. He's recently published a book, along with his wife Jacqueline, called A Stroke Survivor's Miracle, 3 Minutes to Live, 3 Minutes to Die. And he continues to run his health centre and business in Brisbane, Australia. I would like to welcome to the show Trevor Savage. Thanks for joining us, Trevor.
Hi, Edwina. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Excited to have you here.
Yeah, the weather's beautiful. No rain in Brisbane. The sun shines and we're going to have another beautiful day.
Oh, well, you are. Don't brag about the no rain. Sydney's having a pretty wet time, as we know. Lucky you. We're hoping for sunshine too.
Yeah, I watched the football last night. It was wet in Sydney.
Oh, yeah. It's been pretty pretty average for Sydney weather, actually, for most of the year. But I guess we have to embrace the rain. But I'd love to just start by actually asking you how it is that you came into this area of health. You know, alternative medicine when you started back in 1979 was a lot less known, I guess, than it is now. So what was it that set you on your path? Was there one particular event or personal experience that set you on this path?
I guess from when I was about 10, my father used to take me to a chiropractor because we lived in a small country town and the chiropractor only came to town once a month. And I had an accident of riding a bullock, and I hurt my back, and my father took me to a chiropractor. He started doing some crunching on me, and he said there was about 20 bones out. And I thought, how many bones have you got? Anyway, as a young child, the chiropractor said, would you like to stay and watch while I treat people while my father and mother were shopping? And so I did, and so I learned chiropractic firsthand from when I was about 10. And did that for a couple of years. And then I used to practice on my parents and my two sisters and all my friends at school. So that was how I got introduced. But the reason I got involved with naturopathy was in 1976, my uncle ended up with a brain tumor. So I started reading books about brain tumors, and it came down to understanding how cells work. And so study of cytology sort of incited me to want to learn more. And then I started studying naturopathy in 1976, and I got my MD in 1984, I think it was, or 1982. So it sort of, in those days, it was all weekend courses and study, and it wasn't like college now.
Wow, yeah, well ahead of your time. And I'm amazed you started so young. I love the story you on a bull as well, at that age. That's pretty wild.
I did live on a dairy farm, and I used to break horses in when I was very young too. So, you know, I had a bit of a rough Aussie outback lifestyle. I come from a little town called Gaynder.
Okay, I can't say that I've actually heard of it, so it must be a little town.
It's where they grow all the orange.
Okay, great. Now, let's start with your book, because that's kind of one of your most recent successes. And it's something an experience that inspired you to write the book, A Stroke Survivor's Miracle. Can you kind of, I guess, back in 2011, you combined your complementary approach to medicine with modern medicine to assist with your wife's recovery. What was the miracle that you refer to in terms of experience?
Well, The first thing is that if you live in the United States, 4th of July is a very important day of the year, Independence Day. And I remember being in the United States once and watching the 200th anniversary of that on one of the beaches in Southern California. Anyway, on the 4th of July in 2001, I awoke to find my wife had just died. And she wasn't breathing. I didn't check pulse rate, but I immediately did first aid. And then I dialed 000 for our ambulance. And I just kept working on her to keep her alive. And she started breathing again. The ambulance came. They took her to the hospital. She had went into cardiac arrest. They then did some experimental surgery to embolectomy and angioplasty, like you do with the heart, where they put a stent in. Well, they put a stent into her brain, went in through the right carotid artery and pulled the blood clot out. And as a result of that, she then went into cardiac arrest because the area in the brain where the blood clot was just so happened to be where your heartbeat and your breathing initiates from. So she didn't have a heart attack. There was nothing wrong with the heart. It's just signaling to the heart and the breathing stopped. Anyway, they had to pump her full of drugs and jump up and down on her and do all the things they do in surgery and first aid. Not first aid, but, you know, in emergency, they have to do these things. So after all that happened, she came out and the doctor said she had a 50-50 chance of living. And I guess, you know, there's sort of a spiritual aspect to it. There was a lot of people that were praying for her. And there was also, you know, the doctors were really working fervently with every moment of her life. And the fact is that she only spent 1 or 2 days in the intensive care unit, and then she went to the stroke ward, and they said that she was recovering pretty well. So, you know, that she got over the dying part. And then she was only in hospital for about 3 weeks, and she went to rehab. So that's not what usually happens with stroke victims. And she hadn't lost her speech, even though she had difficulty finding words. And there were some funny experiences that we experienced there because, you know, I used to go up to the hospital and spend a fair bit of time with her. And one day she asked me if I'd bring up her wraparounds, and I didn't know what that meant. But after a couple of days, I realized it was her glasses because she couldn't see without them. And then she said she wanted me to bring her helmets up, and I didn't know what a helmet was. We ride motorbikes, but why would you want a helmet in hospital? And she actually meant her slippers. Doctors told us her word-finding... Her word-finding skills were impaired because of the cardiac arrest. So, you know, it was sort of, well, not funny, but there was a bit of comedy in the whole situation. And that she's completely grown out of all that. She has no neural deficit now. And so as far as her rehab doctor said, he's the only person in Australia and Great Britain that he knows of that have had this basal artery thrombosis or stroke and has survived with no neural deficit. So put all that together and I consider it a miracle.
Absolutely a miracle. And what alternative or complementary approaches did you use? I mean, I'm assuming that had a big bearing on the fact that there was no neural deficit. Or what made her different from everyone else, in your opinion?
The first thing we did was she was on certain drugs, which she had to be on when she was in rehab. And when she came home, our local doctor went through and slowly removed all of the drugs. And while she was in rehab, I was giving her a very large mixture of vitamins and minerals and herbs and mineral salts. And she also had one of our best friends has got a degree in homeopathy, so she had her on a lot of homeopathics. And another one of our friends is a practitioner of Young Living Oils, and so she used to give her every few, you know, like every week or so, she'd come in and give her feet, her legs massaged with essential oils, and then I was using them on her chest. And then we had another friend who used to massage her feet. You know, like every, she came up just about every second day for about 2 months. And she used to massage her feet. Then I did a lot of kinesiology work. And there were things that we would find out, like with her sense of balance. So I worked with her, what we call her, was her gravity reflexes. and there was a pressure pads on her feet, so I cleared those, and within a couple of days she was walking without having to have the nurse hold her. And then, because, you know, when you're in these situations, of course, everybody has to have catheters for passing urine, and she got in, she had a problem where she still had to wear the catheter, so I did some work on that, and next day they took the catheter out. And, you know, there's every time we found that the doctors had found another problem, we'd work on it. And so she only spent 6 weeks in rehab, and then she came home, and then I just continued all of this work, and then we started doing exercises, and I used Bioptron light therapy on her, which helps, you know, the cells in regenerating and rejuvenating. It's a light therapy unit that was developed over 40 years ago in first of all in Hungary, and then it was out of Switzerland. And then, you know, we just had good food, because when you're in hospital, you're given food that'll keep you alive, but it doesn't really give you life. And so when she came home, she got into fruit, salads, and, you know, so I became her full-time carer. You know, the other thing too is she had a swallowing problem. So how do you swallow about 30 or 40 pills every day? What I found is if you put them in the blender and you grind everything up to a powder, mix it to some protein powder and a bit of barley powder, then add it to her favourite juice, which was banana and mango nectar, and she was able to then have, you know, a glass of that every day. And so at night we do the same thing with her calcium, magnesium and adenosine and zinc and vitamin C and B vitamins. So I doubt whether she's really had any deficiency of vitamins or minerals since I started treating her.
Yeah, very important element by the sound of it. Can you explain a little bit about is it Bioptron light therapy you mentioned? I haven't actually heard about that treatment before. What exactly, what's the sort of basis of that? How did that work?
Well, basically it's a quartz halogen bulb, and it gets reflected off a special mirror, and it basically makes the light come out of the unit in parallel lines. This is full spectrum sunlight with the UV filtered out of it, and it has been used in, I guess, in Europe. Anybody that ever goes to a beauty therapy parlor would know they put this special light on them, and that's Bioptron light. In Sydney, Australia, at the Concord Hospital in Sydney, Professor Peter Mates, who's the number one burn specialist in Australia, became aware of the light from the company after the Bali bombing. And anybody that knows much about world politics knows that there are a lot of Australians that were killed or burned very badly in the Bali bombing in 2002 in October. And the ones that didn't lose all their skin ended up in Concord Hospital in Sydney. And Professor Mates uses the Bioptron light on all of his burns units every day. So, if you think about that, you realise it does have some real true validity, because, you know, when you think about it, everything that we have on the planet comes from the sun. You know, all the plants and, you know, everything is controlled by the sun. So if you can produce artificial natural sunlight and then eliminate the UV, then you've got a low energy product that, as it passes through the cell membrane, it organises the polar heads and tails on the fatty acids so that they line up just like in a magnetic field array. And that prevents the bacteria and the viruses from entering, and it also stimulates collagen production and your macrophage production, so infection is reduced and basically eliminated, and then collagen is put down, and as a result of that, healing takes place. I burnt my leg on my motorbike. And usually a leg burn from a muscle on a motorbike could take months to heal. Well, it healed in 7 days with no infection. So, you know, it definitely works. And by, you know, shining the light on her neck and in her brain, it goes through, it works on the blood cells, but it also works on the tissue. So she is on no medication now, except the blood pressure is still a little up, and that's just on a very light blood pressure tablet. But there's no other stroke medication that she's on. And the professor who did the surgery was actually more than amazed, and I contacted him the other day, and I told him I'd like to offer a book to him, you know, just as a thank you. And he wrote back and asked, he said, my wife Jacqueline's permission, he'd like to use the book as a reference book in his training of young doctors.
That's fantastic news, just in terms of not only how your book and your story is going to educate all of us in that area even more so, but the fact that the medical field is coming on board as well, like as in the traditional medicine, or I don't know the term I would use, but in terms of conventional medicine is supportive of alternative medicine approaches, you know, in combination, and the desire for the educational areas of those fields to want to embrace it as well is exciting in terms of that shift. Have you noticed a big shift in terms of that from your starting time in, you know, 1979 in complementary medicines and alternative medicine to now? I would imagine you've noticed a huge shift in that area.
Yes, definitely, because when I started off, I was, I think that the male of a witch is a warlock, and so people used to think of me as a warlock, and I study with some witches. But, you know, as time has gone on, we now have colleges and universities that are now training people. Research is being done. You know, my friend who's a homeopath also has a degree in, a PhD, because she studied iodine and thyroid. And, you know, there's so much more new knowledge coming out because of the improved relationship between, you know, the alternative or the complementary medicine area and orthodox medicine. You know, it's sort of, nobody's got the complete picture, but you put it all together and you've got more chance of completing the puzzle.
Yeah, and your story very much shows that, your story with your wife, and exciting story. So we'll certainly, that's available on your website, isn't it? So we'll give everyone your website address at the end, for sure. Anyone on FM and the Health and Happiness Show, I'm speaking with Trevor Savage on his approaches with complementary medicine and alternative approaches for healing. Sorry, Trevor, I think I did cut you off then.
Oh, that's okay. I decided, because of the worldwide phenomena of what might happen with this book once it takes off, you know, the book itself is like an A4, a normal size writing pad size, and it's about 180 pages, and it's a hardcover book, so it's going to be a little bit on the weighty side for postage for areas. What I've done, I've actually got a PDF file of the book, exactly the same as the book that is being printed, and I've put it onto a CD so that, you know, we can post the CD to anybody, anywhere on the planet, and I'm even prepared to post it free of charge to anybody who would like it. And the book itself is only $29.95 or just under $30. So, you know, I want to share it out there as much as I can. There's one other important thing that I would like to put out for anybody in Australia anyway, and that is that we have three zeros, or three noughts, as we say in Australia. So, you know, if you dial 000 on your mobile phone, you'll get 666. It's not 000, it's 000. And the time it takes for people to work this out could be the time that it takes for somebody to die. Because usually, you have no blood in your brain. After 3 minutes, you're dead. But if you can keep that blood going into the brain and, you know, you can get help as quick as possible, you have a far greater chance of somebody recovering, like my wife did. Because from the time it happened to when the ambulance came was only about 20 minutes, which was, you know, really good in Australia. And when she got to the hospital, she went straight into emergency, and of course she went into cardiac arrest because of where the blood clot was, and then they told me they had to operate. And it was only at the end of the day that they came and talked, the doctors came and discussed it with me and said that they couldn't guarantee anything because the work that they were doing was 100% experimental. That really built a lot of confidence in me, knowing they're experimenting. And yes, normally they don't know what they're really doing. You know, but she became a guinea pig in an experiment, and they've been only doing it for 5 years. And on top of that, there's only two hospitals in Queensland where they do it. And I don't even know if they do it in other hospitals in Australia, which is, you know, a bit of a challenge. But basically, to keep it simple, they go in through the artery and they put a stent in, you know, which is like a little expandable collar, which usually keeps blood vessels open around your heart. Well, they did this into the brain, and then they put the stent, as they opened it, the stent went through the blood clot, then they were able to close the stent and pull the stent out, and that pulled the blood clot out. So this has only been tried in Australia for about 6 years. So, you know, before 6 years, then your alternative was, as the social worker at the hospital told me, everybody else is dead. So, you know, that's why I think it's a real miracle, because he's the only person that our doctors know of in Australia who has ever survived with no neural deficit. Now, you can't have a stroke without having some problem. And it wasn't a bleeding stroke, it was just a blood clot, which just basically blocked all the blood going into the brain. So, you know, another, hadn't have done it, would have been dead within a couple of hours.
Wow. And you were performing, you did CPR on her, you assume? You said she was,
oh, yeah.
Was she not breathing, or was there a pulse?
I can't remember about the pulse, but she wasn't breathing, and her jaw had clenched tight, so she wasn't able to, you know, breathe through her mouth because the jaw had shut her throat off, and so I had to actually get her and do CPR sideways on her while I was twisting her head up and around and back. I mean, how I did it is probably a miracle, because I had only just done my first aid review course about 2 weeks before, so I was like, it was fresh in my mind. But I'm not saying that I'm overconfident in first aid, but it certainly is something I think that every person in the world should spend a day learning, because it might mean, you know, the life or the death of a loved one or a friend or somebody you've never met.
Absolutely. And as you say, even if you're not hugely confident, I mean, the main thing with EAR or CPR, whichever it is, it sounds like you might have got it before actually her heart stopped and just got the oxygen moving, which means, you know, the heart didn't stop. It's enough. It's just keeping that rhythm of, you know, the blood pumping and the oxygen going through. That is enough.
Yeah.
And often, you know, people get caught up with worrying about the reps that they're supposed to be doing and how many breaths is it and how many compressions. And often, you know, the message that I only just do on volunteer work on the ski fields in Australia, and it's, you know, it's really a matter of just keeping that rhythm as you did, and that's saved her life by the sound of it in that situation.
Be quite truthful, how I was doing this, I had, she's in a bed, and we've got a latex bed, so, you know, she sort of sunk into it, so I couldn't really do the usual things, and I couldn't get her out of bed, and she's lying on her side, and so I had one knee in her back and one hand on her sternum, and I'm squeezing them together while I've got her head twisted around to open up the airways. So, it was an alternative
to the
usual
CPR.
Yeah,
so I
just did what I had to do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And, you know, like you say, she's here with no neural deficit, and had you not known that, it may be different. What a fantastic story. And as you say, a great message for us all to make sure we all keep current on first aid, because you never know. Now, in terms of your treatment for your wife and for many of the clients that you work with, I know you've worked with several other people who've had conditions of the brain and other illnesses. Now, kinesiology, I know you're a kinesiologist and a naturopath. Kinesiology, a lot of people aren't quite sure exactly what it is. Would you be able to just give a bit of an explanation on the basics of how you would describe kinesiology? I know you have several strains.
Yeah, there's probably 100, 150 different kinesiology programs that people can learn now, because once people learn a bit of information, they make it their own, and then there's another program developed. But basically, kinesiology is an understanding of movement in the body, and we use neurology or muscle testing to ascertain whether the nervous system is intact. So pushing on arm or leg involves nerves. And if a normal muscle or a normal leg muscle should contract and it doesn't, then that indicates there's something wrong. And so through the study you learn what is necessary to do to enhance the integration of the nervous system. Now, along the way, many people have discovered how to use this to ascertain, you evaluate the state of the nervous system through the muscle testing, and then you learn how to do various techniques therapies, and then you can retest them. So if you're working with somebody who's dyslexic, you can do some pre-tests, then you do something, and then you can retest. And that's an important thing, because usually in most therapies, you don't know for maybe 6 months whether what you did worked. But in the kinesiology model, you can tell immediately. So that if a muscle was weak and you do something, it now makes it strong. That indicates that a change has taken place in the body, in the limb, but also in the neurological program in the brain, your computer program. And so we're able to use this to correct head injuries, allergies, phobias, whiplash injuries, balance blood pressure out, work with, kids who have got learning difficulties, emotional stresses, extremity problems. You know, people have carpal tunnel. Well, how do you treat carpal tunnel? You can go to the doctor and he'll say, oh, we're going to operate, we're going to cut the nerves, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Or you can actually reorganize the neurology, and you can use nutrition, things like fish oils and anti-inflammatories, like flavonoids, and reduce the inflammation so the tissue will settle down. And then if you use things like Bioptron light, that will just add a new dimension to it. So, you know, I use a bit of everything in treating people. But people say, well, what can you do for this? I don't know, but I can do something.
Yeah. But it's amazing that you can treat things like this, those who are dyslexic and ADD and ADHD, through that testing. It's an amazing approach in that. The scope is huge from what you've just said.
Kinesiology is only new as far as most of the therapies that are around. It's not like acupuncture, which has been around for a long time, and chiropractic's been around for a long time, and massage. Kinesiology draws from all of that research, and we have had a lot of people, medical doctors and psychologists and all types of therapists that have refined the understanding of how the body works. And that's what we're really working with. You know, you don't have to, if you just look at a person's body and say, how can I find out what's wrong with that person? You can take blood tests, you can take x-rays, you can take MRIs, and, you can do hormone assays and things like tests for iodine levels. But when you use kinesiology, you're basically asking the person's brain not only what is the problem, but what was the cause of the problem. So as you can see, once you really get into it, it can become very, very finite in the way that you can work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's uncommon because, you know, a lot of Olympic athletic teams now use kinesiology as a part of their training and preparation and injury treatment. I actually work with Pat Cash and David Musters and John Fitzgerald. I treated him when he was playing in the Australian doubles championship once, and he'd sprained his ankle. And the interesting thing is, when you're a tennis player, if you have an injury on a court, you only have 3 minutes to have the problem fixed before you have to forfeit. Now, there have been a number of tennis players when I've been working with them. I've been able to, fix up ankles and knees and all those type of things in less than 3 minutes, so that the game could continue. So it's one of those things that if you ever get a chance to learn Touch for Health, which is now taught in about 40 countries around the world, because it was developed by Dr. John Fee, a chiropractor from Pasadena in California. It was designed for lay people and for patients and clients to be able to learn how they could help themselves and their families to overcome pain and stress. And then Frank Mahoney came along and he worked with the other side of kinesiology. He looked at muscles that were too tight. So he developed a program called Hyperton X. As he said, just a play on words, but it deals with testing muscles when they're in their most stretched position to see whether there's a problem. And if you have a muscle that's outside its comfort zone, you can have an injury. So he worked for 3 years with the U.S. Olympic track and field athletic team before the 1984 Los Angeles Games. And he was a good friend of mine, and Mel Segundo in L.A. And I studied with him in 1985, I think it was. And then I brought the program to Australia The first person I treated was Pat Cash, and he was ready to have surgery on his back. He was out of Wimbledon, and the end result was that I got rid of his pain, fixed his back up. He went to the doctor, had a clomipapine injection into the ruptured disc that he had. 6 weeks later, he was playing for Australia, and then he went on and won Wimbledon. So it was a Wimbledon or a wheelchair.
Wow.
And a lot of people really benefited from this program,
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, kinesiology itself, I mean, I know recent research that I'm aware of anyway, the University of Oregon, Professor, I think Michael Posner is a professor of neuroscience who did some studies on feed-forward versus top-down processing, which is kind of this idea that our perceptions, you know, can be manipulated by expectations and, you know, the fundamental study of cognition, and showing that sensory, also at, I think, Harvard University, they were looking at the top-down processes override sensory processing, in that our brain, the suggestion from what I gather is like 10 times more information was coming down with the sensory stimulation coming down from the brain to the senses versus from the senses up. I know as a child I was kind of brought up that, you know, the senses, you feel something and then it tells the brain what's going on type of thing. But now recent research is showing that the brain is actually perhaps directing our perceptions and creating whatever we're feeling or seeing, which to me seems quite relevant to your work in kinesiology, in that you are working at the level of the brain and neurology, but perhaps influencing that perception and that creating our reality, which is a very powerful angle to be coming in from, that you're starting from the top based on recent research in neuroscience. Recent research in neuroscience and neuroplasticity had a big influence on kinesiology for you?
Yeah, I think it has. And, you know, there's so much new information that we keep on finding out about. Just to give you an idea from a statistical point of view, it was estimated in 2000 that in the United States that the cost of unresolved head injury to the health system in the United States was $53 billion. And when I speak to doctors and practitioners and I ask them, how do you evaluate a head injury? They look at me with a look like I've just hit them over the head with a mullet or a fish. You know, they don't even know what the question means. And yet, you know, how many people don't have a head injury is probably the best way of looking at it. And so, you know, we know that by reorganizing the brain's relationship to the rest of the body through the atlas, that it can make a dramatic change to your whole neurophysiology and your hormonal system. And the thing is, with kinesiology, we talk about muscle testing, but in a way, it's really proprioception testing, because it's the proprioceptors that register pain and touch and pressure and all of these things and sound, and they're sending signals back to the brain all the time, and the brain's computing it all, and then, as you said, very large amounts of information is then sent out from the body. One of my colleagues is an American guy from Texas, but Dr. Charles Krebs was a marine biologist, and he went down deep sea diving many years ago, and he ended up with the bends, and his whole body was paralyzed. And it was only through kinesiology that he was able to actually get his body back to 95% normal. And he wrote a very interesting book called A New Way of Understanding, you know, from his scientific sort of aspect and from the kinesiology aspect. And a good friend of mine, Dr. Bruce Dew from New Zealand, actually worked on him using kinesiology, and he was able to then breathe and walk and, you know, process basically back to normal after about a year of treatment. So, you know, it's there are a lot of what I call miracles out there that are happening every day in the world of kinesiology. And even I developed an allergy correction back in 1980. I think it was. I presented my research at the University of San Diego at a Touch for Health conference, and there was a guy there from Brazil, and Vincent Vincenzo, and he was in charge of the Kinesiology Training Institute in Rio de Janeiro. And in Melbourne in 1994, at the World Kinesiology Conference down there, he came up to me and he introduced himself, and he said, "Trevor, I want to thank you for what you taught me about allergy correction." And I had never met him before. And he said that he had taken note of what I presented in my paper, and he took it back to Brazil, and he said, thousands of my instructors now teach that technique and work with your technique all over Brazil. He said, your name is revered in Brazil, and I've never been to Brazil. So you just, you know, once you understand principles, it becomes like a law of physics or a law of chemistry, and, you know, it can be repeated. It's not like I've got any special power.
No, that's amazing that you're making such a positive shift in that way, though. And you've also developed your own program, Integrative Kinesiology. What inspired you to create your own program? You know, what does it involve, or what's the point of difference with that program?
Okay, Integrative Kinesiology was a program that I developed because I introduced educational kinesiology to Australia, which dealt with learning difficulties and emotional stress in young children. And you know, it was a very basic program, but I disagreed with the hypothesis of the author of educational kinesiology, and that his belief was that when you look at an X, you look at two parallel lines not touching and do a muscle test, that you should be strong on the X and weak on the parallel lines. Well, my belief was you should be strong in looking at an X and looking at parallel lines, and we have a repatterning technique where you do a marching unilateral and then a bilateral march, moving your eyes through the six different directions of left, right, and up to the left and up to the right and down to the left and down to the right. And what this basically does is access different areas of your brain where, based on neurolinguistic programming, we know we process information, you know, through turning the eyes into these different directions, and it actually goes in and clears out like a radar stresses and reconnect pathways or movement. And in doing that, you can actually repattern a person for any goal, and you can help them overcome learning difficulties. And I've had people that basically hardly knew their alphabet were able to read after about an hour. You know, so, you know, some of the things that we actually...
That's powerful.
Yeah. There's some very, very powerful techniques that I've been involved in, or, as I said, that's a program I developed, and also developed the allergy correction, which actually, everything comes out of something else. The allergy correction came out of the phobia correction that was developed by Dr. Roger Callahan, who's a psychologist in the United States. He wrote a book called The 5-Minute Phobia Cure, and all of his psychology mates, he was going on TV all over the United States, you know, from the New York to Los Angeles, and he used to demonstrate how people who were scared of snakes and spiders and all heights and all this, you know, you'd have somebody who couldn't stand to look at a snake, and 10 minutes later, they've got this 10-foot boa constrictor wrapped around their body, and they had no fear. Anyway, I based the allergy correction loosely on that model, which, you know, which worked very well. And then Roger's book was called The 5-Minute Phobia Cure, which upset all the psychologists because, you know, they've studied a long time to learn how to spend hours working with people to overcome phobias, and you can overcome most phobias in a few minutes. And so the name of the book became How to Overcome Public Speaking Fears for Executives, and that was acceptable. Mm. But it's the same
right
book.
Yeah, right. Whatever appeals to our psyche at the time. But the message is, like you say, so obviously it can be applied to anything.
Yeah, that's right. And then I introduced my program of allergy correction, and then a friend of mine in Las Vegas, who was a retired evangelical Baptist minister, he took what I taught him and a bit of other stuff that he learned, and he put a program together called Stuff That Works, and he started treating all of the people who smoked and were overweight in Las Vegas and started getting fantastic results. And so,
wow,
you know, it's sort of, It just keeps on continuing because people draw from each other, and, you know, I'm not saying it's a license just to plagiarize everybody else's work, but, you know, you learn from the principles, and then you add something to it and change it a little bit, and you've got a whole new program. So, you know, neurology is, well, one of my businesses, well, I have another college, and it's called Australasian Academy of Applied Bioneurology. And applied bioneurology is probably the most apt way of describing the work that I do because it's applied, has to do with life, and it has to do with neurology.
Now, in terms of neurology, and you mentioned something to me when I was chatting to you the other day about in terms of kids and development of kids and something we should be aware of with palates and just in terms of neurology and how it affects in terms of children's development and sucking the thumb and things like that. I just think that's an important message that maybe a lot of people aren't as aware of as you evidently are. Could you outline something about that?
Well, the first thing that you probably notice, and I'm talking about American kids because I've spent a lot of time in America, that every second child you'll see in their teenage years wears braces in the United States. In Australia, it's not quite that number, but becoming a bit more like that. Now, the reason you have to wear braces is because your dentition didn't develop correctly. And so when you go back to the very beginning, we're all born as babies, and then gradually we develop teeth. And the teeth come out of your maxilla, which is your upper jaw, and then your lower jaw is your mandible. And what stimulates this and also forms the roof of the mouth, which is the maxilla, it's two bones that make up the upper part of your face, then the sucking on a nipple, you know, where breastfeeding is really very important. Well, of course, if you can't breastfeed, you have to feed the baby somewhere, some other way, so you feed it through bottle feeding, and then, you know, there are companies that make the best nipple that I've seen has been the teat or whatever you call it, has been the nut. And this is sort of half squashed, and it forms the shape of the nipple when a baby is suckling. And the pressure of the tongue up against the roof of the mouth is what forms the arch. Now, once you've got the arch formed and the teeth start coming in, the tongue pushes up to form the maxillary roof of the mouth, and also as the teeth come down, the tongue goes behind both of the teeth to make sure that they line up for cutting. You know, like if you're going to eat an apple, you've got to put your front teeth through the apple. So the tongue has to be in a position so that it will push the teeth into the right position. Now, if the upper maxilla hasn't developed properly, you might have children that are sucking their thumbs. And I know there's a lot of conjecture as to why they suck their thumbs, but one of the things is that the brain really desires that pressure against the roof of the mouth in the suckling process. So if the tongue is stuck too far out and it's not pushing up against the mouth, then you're going to have problems. So then as the teeth develop, you can then have buck teeth, or you can have teeth that are bent in, or you know, all sorts of problems with your dentition. And then your teeth, of course, are the result of the foods that you eat. So if you eat sugary foods, then you end up with a bit of sort of holes in your teeth or dental caries. Then you, as that goes on, you have to then fill them with something. Well, in the old days, they used to use lead, and they found that wasn't really good. So then they used another toxic metal called mercury. And they found if you mix mercury, tin, antimony, and silver, and a bit of copper, and mix all this together and make it into an amalgam, you could mix it, it will be soft, and then you could push it into the space and it would then harden. Well, it's called amalgam because it's an amalgam of metals. And so we now know that mercury is very toxic and it keeps leaching out because it's not a stable substance. And so then you can end up with health problems because that will kill your bacteria in your gut. And then as the teeth decay away further, it can go all the way down to the nerves that actually are in the base of the teeth. And so then you end up having to have root-filled teeth. When you have root-filled teeth, you can end up with bacteria in the gum. So this poisoning, as you get older, can cause a lot of health problems. And so we now know from medical research that if you have infection in your gum, gingivitis, and you have the periodontal ligament where the teeth are attached to the actual bone itself, if that has an infection in it, can actually cause heart disease, and you know, people can die from that, and hormonal problems, and on and on and on. So my understanding and training in this area over, you know, a couple of thousand hours has shown us that if you get rid of the amalgam, you get rid of the root filled teeth, improve your diet, make sure that the teeth are lined up properly, and the surface is able to grind grains and chew meat and apples and all those type of things, that your health can improve, because as you have disease in your body, it's going to affect more than just the local area.
Yeah, wow. See, this I found that really interesting, because I certainly understood there was some importance in in breastfeeding or in sucking, but I had no idea the extent that can carry on, as you say, to further risks in hormonal changes and heart diseases and quite serious risks later in life if we don't have that development at a young age.
I learnt most of my knowledge of root-filled teeth from a since-departed friend of mine who died when he was 94, I think. Anyway, Dr. George Meinig from Ojai in California, he was one of the 19 founding members of the American Root Canal Therapists Association. He spent all of his time, well, he spent 20 years at 20th Century Fox treating all the movie stars with the root canals and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, he later wrote a book in his later years called Root Canal Cover-Up Exposed, and then it changed to Root Canal Cover-Up, which is a purple-covered book, and it sold very well. Of course, he died in May 2008, I think it was, and I was lucky enough to have actually studied with him a lot, and I learned so much from his book and so much from him. And the thing about George was that he was a very, very healthy guy, and he just wanted to set the case right that root canals were dangerous. And so he worked with another guy who I studied with out of Colorado. And Hal Huggins was a guy who got into mercury, and he written a number of books, and he trained thousands of dentists and doctors around the world on the dangers of amalgam and how amalgam can impair health. His belief was that major cause of MS was amalgam toxicity poisoning. And he actually had MS himself, because he used to work with amalgam and mercury a lot. And he went onto a detox program and got all of his amalgams removed. And today, I think he's about 80, in his 80s, and he's still training dentists, whereas, he was very sick when he was up until about 30 years ago. So, all of this information, which is all based on pretty good research, is very interesting. And, of course, this is what I teach my students. When I'm teaching them, you mix that in with all the kinesiology and all the nutritional work, and you've got a pretty good package to help people improve their quality of life and their health.
Oh, absolutely. And so your programs are available. Are they available, worldwide, or how can people find out about the programs if they're interested?
Because of the type of material that's covered, and most of it's based on hands-on kinesiology work, we mm-hmm. do only teach in live seminars. I don't have a mm-hmm. Program that people do by correspondence, unfortunately, so it does mean travelling all the way to Brisbane, and because I've got to look after my wife now, I can't travel like I used to, but I have taught in Dubai and Indonesia and New Zealand and the United States and all over Australia since 1980, so mm-hmm. Now that I'm 60, and my wife is, as I said, I've got to look after her now. She's recovered from everything, but she's still not able to fly, and there's still just a few little things, but they're not real neural deficits. They're just health situations that we have to still be careful of. So
sure,
I teach myself
sure.
in Brisbane.
Right, so you're teaching in Brisbane, And I assume, though, that you would then be training practitioners who can practice worldwide for their own...
Yeah, that's the idea. I've got one student who's Masato, who's become good friends with. He's a Japanese chiropractor who spends a lot of time in America, but he's now studying with me, and he's actually going to be teaching my work in Japan. He's getting all of my manuals that I've written translated into Japanese. So, that's one way that we've been able to do that. And I've got another friend who translated some of my work into Finnish. He teaches in Finland now. So, you know, there are a number of, just a few select people around the world that have, I've been able to help. And, of course, I'm not the only person teaching a lot of this work either, but I've been one of the main people teaching.
Yeah, it's really life-changing stuff. So the more that we can all learn, the better, I think. Like, as you say, as we all learn and have our own angles, then different new approaches come out of that as well. Now, you also mentioned to me some important information about Lipitor, a drug that's used, from my understanding anyway, for treating high cholesterol and to lower risk of stroke and heart attack and other complications.
Time delay causes a bit of a challenge, doesn't it?
Sorry about that. So, yes, go for it. I'll stop talking for a moment.
Lipitor is the Pfizer drug company's brand of a statin drug. And the statin drug is supposedly works through the liver to block the production of cholesterol. Now, what has happened over the years is that cholesterol has become a substance in our body that, if it's really high, can cause some problems. But the research seems to indicate this. Once you can measure something like that, then you can always find some drug that will bring it down. And so the emphasis, I think it's something like $200 billion a year is spent on statin drugs, to give you an idea of how much money can be made out of this. And I don't know how many of those drugs have actually helped anybody, but everybody that takes statin drugs has side effects, serious side effects. And the same thing I found out from one of the doctors whose medical report that I get, like it's an internet report I get every couple of days, and this particular Dr. Douglas, you know, points out that if women are prescribed Lipitor, then it's bad news. Number one, it doesn't work on the positive side, if there was a positive side, because estrogen blocks its action in the liver. So any women who are on Lipitor end up with side effects on the negative side, but doesn't really lower their cholesterol. And I've had many of my clients and many of my friends that have agreed with that. Now, also I found an article on the internet written by the retired president of the AMA, and her comments weren't very flattering either about Lipitor. And the Mayo Clinic had a few words to say about Lipitor too. So some important people around the world seem to have found that Lipitor is not the be-all and end-all. But the dangerous thing is Lipitor is a prescribed drug, but it's just about out of its patent protection right. And the Pfizer company wants to have it listed as an OTC drug. So you can just walk in and say, I want my Lipitor, which I think would be horrendous. But, you know, these are the things that can happen because, you know, Big Pharma is running the world now.
Yeah, yeah. Now, are there any final tips that you'd like to leave? I'm just conscious of time and I want to make sure everyone can get your contact details, but is there any other message that you wanted to share before we do that? You've given us plenty of
information. One of the reasons I believe that my wife has recovered so well is not just because of the supplements that I gave her after she had her event, but for most of her life she has been taking good natural supplements, and she also has had a pretty healthy diet, and she doesn't eat any junk, she doesn't drink and doesn't smoke. So, you know, by the time you get to her age, you have either built up a healthy body or a body that isn't healthy. And when she was in rehab, the doctors couldn't believe it, that she wasn't on any medications at her age. She's 70. And, well, she was 69 when that happened. But she wasn't on any medication at all. So when she was in the rehab, everybody was getting about 20 or 30 drugs a day for all of their ailments. So because she'd looked after herself and had good diet, exercise, and didn't have any things that usually cause health problems, it just gave her a far greater footing to recover the way that she did. So from her point of view, it well and truly paid off. Look after yourself when you're younger. I think that's probably one of the key things that I'd like, you know, everybody to think about, because, you know, if you abuse yourself when you're really young, then your body, you've got youth on your side. As you get a bit older, then you abuse yourself and your body starts falling to pieces. But if you keep on abusing yourself, your body will fall to pieces. And when something comes along, like a real challenge, you just don't have the resources built up. It's a bit like money in the bank.
Absolutely. No, really positive message, which is why we have people like you on the show to educate people on it, to make us all more aware and take responsibility in that way. Totally agree, a really important message. Thank you. Thank you so much for all the amazing information you've shared. As I said, plenty of information that I hadn't heard before, and I'm sure plenty of the listeners may not have as well. But in terms of them contacting you, I'm also going to ask you myself about your courses, but in terms of contacting you, I think there are two main websites, and correct me if I'm wrong. I have Kinesiology, that is kinesiology.nu/Trevor Savage, that's TrevorSavage.com. Is that right, .com, or is it just slash Trevor Savage?
And it's just /Trevor Savage. It's already got the kinesiology.nu.
NU, of course.
Just like .com or .net. It's a separate one.
Ah, okay.
Really interesting. I just mentioned .nu because with the internet, there's .com, .net, and .org. And then after that, there was one called .nu. There's a little island in the middle of the Pacific called Niue, N-I-U-E.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a domicile in exchange for this little country, which is only about 5 kilometres by about 3 kilometres. It's not very big. And all they sell is taro, you know, like yams. So you can appreciate they're not real wealthy. But these couple of geeks from New Jersey offered them a deal to use their country as an international domicile, just like a .com. And I, getting keywords, kinesiology, was a bit challenging. And I ended up getting the .nu, which I own, that website name. And then everybody who's a practitioner can then just pay to have their listing put on there. So it's a global portal for kinesiology.
Yeah, and there's plenty of practitioners on there. I had a look at it before. So, again, yeah, everyone check. If you're looking for kinesiologists, it's a great reference site. And Trevor's own profile is obviously up there. So it's kinesiology.nu/Trevor Savage. And his other website is not.net.au.
Yeah.
So both, I think we have
anybody wants
up on Entangled FM.
Yeah, the www.not.net.au is the Australian site, but you know, the if you go to neural organization with the ztherapy.com, that will just reflect you through to that website. So there's two websites. It'll flick through, I think, to the other one.
Okay.
And on there, I've got the book. I've got the information.
Where is the book? Which website is the book on?
The book is on the dot. The NOT website. It's under books for sale.
Okay. Okay, but great. So not.net.au.
Yeah, if people want to email me, it's very simple. Trevor.savage at bigpond.com.
Okay, fantastic. All right, so the link to the site will be on Untangled FM website, of course. And again, thank you so much, Trevor, for some amazing information. And if you want to find out about some of his courses, which I'm certainly going to ask him about, that'll be on the NOT website too. So it's sounding to me like the website to go to, not.net.au. And of course, you can grab that amazing book to hear about the story with his wife and him, her amazing healing journey. So thank you, Trevor, for being on the show and all of those insights and amazing info. Fantastic. I've really enjoyed it, and I will be talking to you in the future for myself as well. Next week on the show, thank you for being with us today. Next week I'll be speaking to someone on how working with emotional energies can be transformational. Thanks for joining us, and we will be here again same time next week. You're on Untangled FM, the Health and Happiness Show. Signing out, Edwina Griffin and Trevor Savage, and see you next week or speak to you next week. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello.